Now, President Biden met on Monday with a group of Republican senators to talk about the potential for compromise on their different plans for another economic relief package. Biden's $1.9 trillion relief plan would include $1,400 checks to many Americans, extra unemployment benefits, and funding for state and local governments. Republicans have put forth a plan worth $618 billion that would cover $1,000 checks and a shorter window of extra unemployment support. As of today, congressional Democrats appear to be moving ahead with a plan on their own. It comes as a new economic team led by Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has endorsed the idea of more relief spending, due in part to low federal interest rates. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think another economic relief package is needed at all? If so, should it be big or really big or somewhere in between? Would another round of direct payments or unemployment benefits help you and your family? Should support for state governments be part of the deal? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Menzi Chin is professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs. Menzi, welcome back.
Hello, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Before we dig into details of the plans coming out of Senate Republicans and Democrats in Washington, just looking at the state of the economy now, do we need some kind of further intervention from the federal government? And if so, what would you want to see that look like?
Okay, that's an excellent question. And I think that many people think that, you know, given all the spending that's taken place, you know, several trillion dollars worth, up till December of last year, you know, maybe we have things underway so that we don't need more action. And the Congressional Budget Office, which is a nonpartisan scorekeeper for the economy, has just released these projections a couple days ago that indicate that, you know, even with all the stimulus and spending that's in the system, with the Federal Reserve working its best to stimulate the economy, you know, we are looking at an economy that's running at around 3% below what it could be, okay? That is below potential GDP. That works out to being like $420 billion worth of output, less than what we could be producing just this year alone. And if I look out over the next few years, 3 years horizon, it's like $800 billion. So I don't think we should be too sanguine about where the economy is going in the absence of further fiscal action.
One concern, of course, is we've spent a lot of money. That's deficit spending. In effect, there have been concerns, you know, for decades now that too much government debt soaks up liquidity. It can be a drag on the economy in the short and maybe especially the long term. How worried are you about another big package boosting the federal debt?
Well, I think it's important to put things in context. I was worried about a big hit to the government's finances back in 2017 when we gave a multi-trillion dollar plus tax cut at a time when the economy arguably didn't need it. Now you have to look at things, the issue about whether to undertake more spending on the part of the government and build up more debt from two angles. First of all, what would the spending accomplish? Would it prevent firms and businesses and individuals from suffering a lot, from going out bankrupt and disappearing and reducing the prospects for the economy going forward? And secondly, if I am borrowing to keep these, you know, these bad outcomes from occurring, what is the interest rate at which I'm borrowing? Well, I can tell you that most recently, the interest rate in real terms, inflation-adjusted terms, for the U.S. government to borrow for 10 years is about negative 1%. In fact, in real terms, then, you know, you're paying to lend to the U.S. government. So the costs that we typically worry about from increasing government debt, it's not there for the moment. No guarantees about the future, but the Federal Reserve has pretty much committed itself to keeping at least nominal interest rates low for many years to come, several years to come at a minimum. And presumably that would keep real interest rates very low. So the worries about financing this big budget deficit now, I think should be sort of put on the back burner. You have to weigh the cost of not acting against the cost of incurring more debt, but you're incurring this debt at particularly low interest rates.
And that's the argument that new Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has made. She talked about this during her confirmation hearing last month. Here's a listen.
With interest rates at historic lows, the smartest thing we can do is act big. In the long run, I believe the benefits will far outweigh the costs, especially if we care about helping people who've been struggling for a very long time.
So there's agreeing, Janet Yellen agreeing with the point you just made about interest rates. But let's talk about now how to best help people who are struggling, assuming that there's some kind of federal package. What are the most effective ways to use that money to help people maybe dealing in particular with long-term unemployment?
Well, I think, you know, we're in somewhat uncharted territory because this recession and the recovery has been unlike any previous recession, you know, for 100 years. And even then, you know, going back to the last pandemic, it's not clear what the impact was on the economy. So the standard rules that you might use are might not apply. I will say that, you know, unemployment insurance is probably best typically in the sense that you want to keep those people from suffering in a particularly bad way who have lost their jobs, and you want to keep them engaged in the job market. On the other hand, a lot of people have dropped out of the labor market, not because they were laid off, and in which case you would not necessarily get the unemployment insurance. It's because, for instance, they've had to stay home to take care of the children or to take care of elderly parents who have moved in with them. So ordinarily, I would think that a targeted benefit that goes directly to those who have been unemployed, that would be best. But like I say, the circumstances are quite different in this episode here. And we see that in the sort of divergence in the terms of who has been unemployed. And so you see, for instance, females in the labor market who have been forced to take up a greater share of the burden, for whatever reason, of childcare and for taking care of parents. They have borne a greater share of the joblessness, not necessarily because they were fired, but because somebody within the household has to take care of those things. In terms of other direction, for instance, one of the things I noticed that is different between the Senate plan and Biden's overall plan is the failure to support state and local governments. There is essentially zero support for state and local governments in the Senate Republicans' plan, as far as we can tell. And what we learned in the last recession, the Great Recession, was that state and localities were hard-pressed to finance all their services in the recovery from the last recession because they can't really borrow that much. And if we were to zero out the support, I think we'd be replicating a recipe to have a slow recovery. The Biden package has $350 billion of support to fill the hole in the finances for state and localities, in contrast.
We're talking to Menzie Chin, professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison, looking at how the next economic relief package is shaping up in Congress. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What, if anything, would you want to see in another economic relief bill? Would another round of checks or unemployment benefits help you directly? Do you worry about the amount of federal spending? What questions do you have about what the economy needs most as the pandemic still keeps rolling on? Call 800-642-1234. We'll take your calls coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Menzie Chin, professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison, looking at the prospects for another COVID-19 relief package from Congress and what the nation needs now, what the economy needs now. Let's go to your calls at 800-642-1234. Rocky is with us in Plainfield. Rocky, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Rocky?
Well, I'm not making judgment on anything other than $15 minimum wage. He throws that in there, all the small businesses are going to go up belly up. McDonald's are going to go to robots and all that stuff. There ain't going to be much for jobs, so $15 an hour don't make much difference, does it?
Rocky, thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, the Biden plan calls for boosting the minimum wage, Menzie, ultimately up to $15. What do you think of that as part of an economic relief package?
Well, I think that on other grounds, it would have been made a lot of sense to have raised the minimum wage before. You know, there's been a tremendous amount of erosion of the minimum wage at the federal level. The federal minimum wage is the sort of the floor that applies to all sorts of states. And, you know, last time it was raised was sometime, I believe, over a decade ago. So it's $7.25. Think about how much prices have risen over the past, you know, decade or so. And you can think, well, there's been a lot of erosion in the purchasing power of the minimum wage. Now, a lot of states have raised the minimum wage on their own. And so if we look at the impact of raising the minimum wage at the national level, it's not as if everybody is going to see their minimum wage rise. It's going to be applying to certain states, and maybe there'll be impact. But one of the things that we've learned over the past 20 years is that generally the impact of raising the minimum wage is not particularly big in terms of either the number of jobs that are lost and or passing on of prices. So on the other hand, we know that there's been a big distributional impact from this recession, where people who are at the lower end of the income spectrum in terms of income distribution, they have suffered disproportionately. Whereas people, white collar workers, for instance, people can telecommute, they haven't really suffered on average, anywhere near as much as those people who are, you know, earning at the minimum wage. So if you balance off the benefits versus the costs and where you're trying to redress some of the inequities which have grown stronger or more pronounced over this recession, then a minimum wage increase probably makes sense. Even if there's going to be a little bit of disemployment in certain sectors, possibly, and possibly in certain states where $15 is high relative to the average wage.
Thanks for the call, Rocky. We'll go to Cindy in Appleton. Cindy, hi.
Hello. Well, I think they should go big or go home. I mean, they're basically fighting over what I consider to be a pittance. And I think people should be getting stimulus checks every month. They need to do something to help the states. They don't have any problem bailing out big businesses, but when it comes to the rest of us, they fight over it like, you know, peanuts. And it's, to me, it's ridiculous. We need to help people so we can get this economy going again.
Cindy, thanks for the call. Cindy saying the amounts that go to people fairly small in the given the scope of the problem, Menzie.
Well, I empathize with this view, but there is in the Biden package at least $1,400 additional per person, and then there's benefits, direct payments. These are not unemployment insurance benefits, just direct payments for children, per children, in both packages, both the Biden and the Senate Republican. You know, it's $465 billion in the Biden package, which is not inconsequential, given the fact that we've already given several thousand in direct payments to each person. There's several trillion dollars of spending that's already taken place. And these are incredibly large amounts of spending relative to any sort of fiscal packages that we've undertaken in the United States since World War II. I mean, if you can just compare in what we used to call the Great Recession of 2007 to 2009, the recovery or stimulus package that was thought of as being so big was only about $878 billion. So we're many times larger than that. Granted, the challenges are much bigger, but in large sense, we are in the ballpark of trying to get enough support into the economy. And I also want to say, you know, it's not a typical stimulus package where you're just trying to kick up aggregate demand and spending to keep the economy going. You're also trying to support individuals and companies directly so that they don't fall out of the labor force, become homeless, and or firms go bankrupt. So it's actually an effort to keep the economy's productive assets in place. Given that, I think $1.9 trillion is not a crazy number, seems reasonable given the challenges that are likely to come. On the other hand, well, $600 billion doesn't even fill the gap that we have in output, that is, you know, where the economy is relative to where we think it would be if it were operating at its normal level.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Menzie Chin from UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs, looking at what's needed from the federal government when it comes to recovery spending. A couple different plans in the works there. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Sharon is with us in Ashland. Sharon, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Sharon?
Well, I just wanted to say that I think more support for workers is needed, and I am particularly focusing on my situation in that I never received any unemployment support because I got bogged down in this incompetent management of this at Workforce Development in Wisconsin. And so I was never able to get my unemployment, and not because I didn't deserve it or wasn't entitled to it, but because the structures that had been set up to manage it just weren't working. And so, like I said, I have been without that kind of support. And so I would welcome more support from the federal government to make up for that.
Sharon, thanks for the call. Sorry to hear about that. Menzie, there are concerns in Wisconsin and some other states about friction in the delivery of some of these benefits, mm-hmm. even extra ones passed by the federal government.
Yes, I'm so sorry to hear about the mm-hmm. the troubles you face there. And, you know, in some ways, many of us economists have been warning about this problem for many years. What's been true is the unemployment insurance system that we set up in the country was, you know, based upon programs set up, you know, decades and decades and decades ago with antiquated software and equipment, you know, running even now. And we should have been able to update and modernize those unemployment insurance benefit systems beforehand, you know, during the good years, you know, the past few years before the onset of the recession. But we didn't. For a variety of reasons, states have underinvested in modernizing their computer systems and the unemployment insurance system. And in fact, some states, it was the intent of those in charge to make sure that the system was hard to access so that they could limit the amount of benefits. So Florida, it comes to mind, is one of those examples. Well, so we are reaping what we sowed in that sense that we didn't invest. And my hope is that this is a wake-up call so that we can modernize those systems even now or going in anticipation of the next downturn. Well, this also leads to the fact that, you know, we can't rely upon unemployment insurance as the only benefit, the support for workers. So the minimum wage is one way of increasing wages and incomes for particularly low income workers. And then these direct payments, of which the Biden administration is proposing somewhat larger, I think it's $465 billion versus $220 billion for under the Senate Republicans plan, would be going to workers in general. I mean, everybody below a certain income threshold. So that is direct support, which once again, rarely ever, if ever, occurred in a previous recession. So I sympathize with the view that we should be helping workers, particularly those who have struggled the most during this recession more. I think in that sense, the Biden plan, which is on the table, it makes more sense.
Thanks for that call. Nate joins us next, calling from Madison. Nate, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about, Nate?
Yes. So there's been a few trillion dollars spent in stimulus, and I think that this accounts for about a quarter of the entire M2 money supply now. In the past year, when or are we going to see any effects of inflation in the coming years?
Nate, thanks for the call. That's the traditional thought, Menzie. Government spends a lot of money that drives inflation. Is that a concern?
Well, so let me, that's an excellent question. Let me sort of draw the linkages a little bit more closely. So historically, there have been cases where the government increases spending and then the budget deficit widens. Okay, so the budget deficit is the gap between the taxes that it receives and spending, both goods and services and transfers. And, you know, the government has to pay for that somehow. It issues bonds. And, the question is, who's going to be willing to buy the bonds? Is it the public? Is it foreigners? And if they're not willing to, then the central bank, i.e. the Federal Reserve, has to. And the Federal Reserve pays with what's called high-powered money, which can result in more money in the system, M2, which is what the caller referred to, which is currency and checking accounts and savings accounts. Well, then you would have, in that example, maybe too much money chasing too few goods, and that's inflation. Well, we had a tremendous amount of Federal Reserve purchases of government debt in the last recession. And what happened? What happened was that inflation, you know, kept on falling, and we never could get inflation up to even on average the 2% target that the Federal Reserve was shooting for. And so there were many, many worries of many, many people about inflation in the previous episode, which just clearly did not come to pass. And, you know, one of the lessons might be that the sensitivity of inflation to overheating the economy, for instance, is a lot less than it used to be. So it's hard to contemplate at this juncture lots of inflation. Now, just because things have happened a certain way in the past doesn't mean it won't happen in the future. And this is a bigger increase in government debt, which might require a bigger increase in the amount of government debt purchased by the Federal Reserve than in the past. So then you have to wonder, well, will all that money chasing too few goods then result in inflation? And I think the jury's still out on that. But you do have to remember, I don't think that the Federal Reserve is aiming to keep the amount of money supply at as high levels as it is right now. You know, they're trying to keep the money supply way high because we're undergoing a serious downturn at the moment.
We'll leave it there. Menzi, thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks.
That's
for having
Menzi Chen from UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs, looking at economic recovery spending.